previously.
Men and women process differently, particularly with a problem. And guys are, they don't really want to talk about it. And part of that is because guys are fix-it people. And if you can't fix it, we'd rather just not talk about it. And women process by talking about it. And what the men don't understand, the women aren't looking to them for a solution. They're just kind of like, would you just shut up and listen? Turn off the football game.
This is Beyond the Birds and Bees on Austin's Talk 1370.
Good afternoon. Welcome to this week's edition of Beyond the Birds and the Bees. I'm Dr. Lisa Hansard from Texas Fertility Center, and I'll be joined today by Dr. Rinku Mehta. This program is brought to you to educate the public about the issues, diagnostic situations, and treatments available for couples experiencing infertility. For more information, you can go to www.txfertility.com. We have locations in Central Austin at Far West and Mopac, at North Austin Medical Center, and our Round Rock location as well. You can reach us at 451-0149. This show is live today, and if you're hearing me, you're probably listening on the radio, but know that this is also streaming live on talk1370.com. Our call-in number today is 390-1370. Today's topic is, if you've ever been told you'll never have a baby. And this is amazingly common. We will see women and men who come in and say, we're not really sure why we're here because we know that we've been told in the past we're never going to be able to have a baby. And I have a guest today joining me named Michelle. Welcome, Michelle.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Nervous.
Nervous is normal. That's all right. Everyone understands. I'm a little nervous too. Can you tell?
No.
No? Yeah. Well, I'm faking it. I'm faking it really, really well. Jessica, are you nervous?
Not really.
Jessica's our producer. I'm
nervous for y'all.
Oh, yeah. Thanks. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's like, yeah, good luck with that. So Michelle is here to share her story, which really is very, very pertinent to the topic we are discussing today. So I really appreciate your being here. And I know that it's a little nerve-wracking, but I think that what you have to say is going to be really, really important to our listeners.
Okay,
you can start whenever you want to.
Okay. At age 13, I went to my endocrinologist, and I started developing late. So my mother took me, and after they found out through all the stuff I went through, the MRIs and possible this and that, they found out my condition. And at the end of my doctor's appointment, she told me, you won't be able to have children ever with your condition. And I was devastated.
Even at 13, you're hearing all these things. And of course, most 13-year-olds, thank goodness, aren't thinking about having babies anytime soon.
Mm-hmm.
But the thought, even at that age, that this was going to be something that affected you your entire life.
Yes. And I think I cried for like 2 days straight afterwards. And my mother kept on telling me, you're only 13.
Wow.
You know.
It had to be pretty hard for her, too, to watch her daughter go through that kind of an adjustment and, her experience as well, thinking, my daughter's not going to be able to be a mother and I'm not going to be able to have grandchildren from her.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened throughout adolescence?
It was hard. You know, all my cousins, my sisters, they had kids at young age.
Okay.
And with me, I sat by and watched everybody start a family, and I felt behind. I felt left out.
Absolutely. Like you were missing something and you were going to miss it forever.
Mm-hmm. Dating was really hard.
Because that was always in the back of your mind that at some point, this is going to come up, right?
Mm-hmm. And I moved to San Antonio. I met my husband through my cousin, and it was just, I fell in love. And it was hard to tell them. I waited for a long time. In the beginning, I just said, I just have some issues. Then after...
And no details, just, I've got some female issues.
Yes. And then And then finally, I worked up the nerve and told him that if we were going to be together any further, I think it had been over a year, that I couldn't have children. And if he wanted children, I understood if he didn't want to be with me anymore. And he said he loved me and he would stay with me. So we dealt with it together, our whole dating, and we got married and still dealt with it. And it was a whole lot of seeing everybody with their kids not being invited to family functions with birthday parties and stuff like that. And
because you didn't have children your own, and because people were sensitive, I guess, to
yes.
how difficult that might be for you to be in that situation.
Yeah.
With little kids. So your husband, you know, how did he actually take this news?
That was me, ladies. I'm sorry.
What are you doing, Jess? Why are you crying?
I had my paper and it hit the board. I'm sorry. Okay. I saw your face. I just had to apologize.
What are you doing?
Sorry, I did not mean to interrupt you.
And this is the professional. So I guess that Michelle and I, if we screw up, then we're totally forgiven because this is like Jess's job, okay? This is just my weekend gig. I'm sorry. So go on.
Yes, it was. They were kind of sensitive on not to bring up the subject of why we hadn't had kids. And it got to where when we were asked as a couple, me and my husband, he took the blame. He said it was him, you know.
Because he knew how hard it was for you.
Mm-hmm. And every time somebody asked us, you've been together for 7-8 years. How come you hadn't had any children yet, you know? And my parents got to where they would change the subject of their friends asking. Or my husband, like I said, would always take the blame. Or I'd just be like, I'm not ready yet, that kind of thing.
Got it. So what changed? And how long were y'all together before you maybe got some information that things didn't have to be this way?
Oh, 8 years.
Wow. So 8 years into your relationship. Mm-hmm. Okay. So at that time, you were how old?
I believe I was 25 when I found out that, hey, there is possibility.
So what did that look like? What happened?
I went to go see an endocrinologist, and she told me that it was at the end of the appointment. Mm-hmm. After everything, she was like, oh, and by the way, when you're ready to start a family, just let me know, because what your condition you have, it's not a big problem, and we'll get you started. I know a great doctor at Texas Fertility Center that would be able to help you. And I didn't say anything, and she walked out, and me and my husband's mouths were like down to the floor. I was like, did you hear what she said? No, it's not true. It's not true, you know?
Because by now you've spent at least 12 years thinking this is a chapter in my life that's absolutely closed.
Yeah. Yes.
Like there's no way I'm mm-hmm. going to be able to do this.
And I really embedded that in my head. The doctor said, no, I'm not even going to try. Even when my father was the one who always told me, you'll have children. I said, don't tell me that. I can't. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to get my hopes up, you know?
Sure. Right. It's just like it's more painful.
Mm-hmm.
So then what happened?
Well, I went to Texas Fertility Center, seen an excellent doctor, and my journey started. Me and my husband went in to, let's just see what they say, you know? They said it would be all right and I can have children. Let's see what kind of treatment and options I have.
So you're wondering if the endocrinologist was right or if you were going to show up and the doctor at TFC was going to go, oh, yeah, no.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't know what she was talking about.
Yes, because I always
everybody else had always said
guessed
that.
Everybody. So
right.
Someone said yes. I'm like, no, there's a chance it's no. That's what I was told my whole life. So, and I was told by, I think it was what, 4 doctors that it was
that's
never
just the way
happen.
It was.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened?
Well, we went. We got our evaluation done, and everything was good. It was just like, it was a roller coaster ride. Everything was just fast, fast, fast. It happened so fast. I didn't expect, I thought it would be like years and years of appointments and trying. It was just way different from what I thought, you know? I didn't know anything about it because I've never looked into it because it was never possible. So when I finally did, it happened so fast. And when we went and did our medications, it was just, you know, it was a great experience. And I can't wait to do it again, obviously.
So I know your story a little bit. So the problem that you had was that you never, ever had a period,
never.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was because the process from your brain to your ovary, those hormones were not being produced.
Yes, ma'am.
And so the physicians you had seen previously did not know that there were ways to administer those same hormones to get the ovaries to respond,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes, ma'am.
So your issue was that you had eggs, your ovaries were fine, there just wasn't the hormone to tell the ovaries to grow an egg and to ovulate.
Mm-hmm.
So you never had a period on your own, ever, right?
Never, ever had a period on my own.
So once you started the medicines to get the signal to the ovaries, how long did it take for you to have your first ovulation?
2 weeks.
That's all?
2 weeks, that's all.
And in that 2 week period of time, how many times did you have to see the doctor?
Five.
That's it?
That's all. Five.
Five times in 2 weeks, and you're ovulating.
And I was ovulating for the first time.
Wow.
It was.
Wow.
It felt weird, too.
It did, right? Because
yeah.
You'd never had that experience before.
Never.
So you're going, oh my gosh, this is what everyone talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so then once you were ovulating, how many treatment cycles did you have to go through to become pregnant?
Two.
Two cycles.
Two cycles.
So two ovulations. So the second time you ever ovulated in your entire life, mm-hmm. you got pregnant.
I got pregnant.
What did that feel like?
Life-changing. It was the news I thought I'd never, ever hear. I still remember the day like it was yesterday.
And you didn't have to take lots of other hormones once you ovulated and became pregnant. You acted like any other woman that's
yeah,
pregnant?
A normal pregnant woman.
That's a normal pregnant woman.
That's how I felt.
What did your husband say? Do you remember when you got the news?
Yes.
Do you mind sharing that with us?
Yeah, absolutely. We were at my father's work. He's a mechanic, and my husband was changing the oil in our truck. And I was waiting for the call, and it was exactly at 4:20 when I got the call. And I let it ring and ring, and I was scared to get a no, I'm sorry, you're not pregnant call. So I finally answered, like on the last ring possible, and it was one of the nurses. She said she had got my test results back, and my heart, it seemed like it stopped, and I waited to hear in the first words out of her mouth was, congratulations, you're pregnant. And the first words out of my mouth was, are you sure you got the right chart?
Now, you have me confused with another Michelle, right?
Yeah,
you have
like,
to.
Are you sure? She's like, I'm absolutely sure your HCG levels are just skyrocket from the normal levels that it's supposed to be. So I went and I swear it's like I stumbled to my husband running to go and tell him. And words didn't come out of my mouth. It was just tears and tears. And he knew. He knew. He jumped out of that truck real quick and hugged me. And that was it, finally.
And your father, the one who'd said you would have a baby one day?
He told me so.
Because he was there when it happened,
yes,
right?
Yes, he was. Yes.
That's such a great story. And then your pregnancy went fine?
It did, absolutely.
And so tell me about your baby.
My son.
Your son.
He's beautiful.
Perfect and wonderful.
I'm so, so proud to be his mother. He's about to be one next month. So.
He's going to have a birthday.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
And he's the silliest ever. He's a mama's boy. Starting to turn to dad a little bit. That hurts
mm-hmm.
my heart.
It does. It mm-hmm. does. But that's normal.
Yes. He's gorgeous. And he loves to play all the kind of stuff. Does good eater. So.
And what about your relationship now with your family, now that you have a baby and the birthday parties and the cousins and the brothers and sisters?
It's good. Actually, we got a party to go to after the show. So
awesome.
Yes,
great.
It's a birthday party. I've been invited to 4. So I count them.
Absolutely. Because you had all those years of never getting invited,
yes,
right?
Yes. So I count them. What do you call it? Yes. So we're going to a party afterwards. And
is there anything that you would like to tell the listeners who are in a situation similar to the one that you were in?
Yes, there is. Things can come true. I mean, you just got to try. For a lot of times, you know, you really just get fixated on what they say, the doctors, because they're doctors and you believe them, you know?
Sure.
And you just got to try, because I wasn't ever going to try. Me and my husband, and we just said, let's just go. You know, we're never going to know.
Unless we ask the question. And what's the worst thing that can happen? You get told the same thing you've been told before.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we really, really so much appreciate you being with us today, Michelle, and sharing your story.
It's such a
wonderful story, and it's so great to see you happy and healthy and a mother like you never thought you were going to be.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to take a quick break now, and when we come back, Dr. Mehta is going to join me, and we're going to talk about other situations where people may have been told that they were never going to be able to be parents and never going to be able to have a baby. So remember, our call-in number is 390-1370. This is Dr. Lisa Hansard from Texas Fertility. For more information, go to txfertility.com.
And Bees on Austin's Talk 1370.
Welcome back to Beyond the Birds and the Bees. I'm Dr. Lisa Hansard, and this is Dr. Rinku Mehta joining me. Hi, Rinku.
Hi.
Good afternoon. And so if you're just tuning in, our topic today is if you've ever been told you'll never have a baby. And we just had a great story shared with us by a young woman named Michelle who was faced with that. And once she did a little bit more investigation and got plugged in with the right people to help her, she was successful very quickly and very easily in becoming pregnant. And now she has a beautiful, beautiful baby boy. This topic is really important because a lot of times, and she talked about this also, that she was developing a little bit later and hadn't started having periods. And so her mother did what any mother would do and took her to the doctor to see if there was a problem and why she hadn't begun to go through puberty. And unfortunately, sometimes the information that's delivered at that time is either incorrect are delivered in a way that is very damaging and traumatic to particularly a young woman. We'll talk about women first. And it's not uncommon at all that reproductive endocrinologists and infertility specialists like Dr. Mehta and I are the ones who are seeing these young women the very next time to talk about what the approach needs to be to go through puberty and also to be able to discuss fertility options. So it's not uncommon at all that that these women get the message from their doctor, sorry, you have this abnormality and you're not going to be able to have kids, but you can always adopt.
I completely agree, Lisa. You know, so many times in our professional lives, we've seen such cases. And, you know, when a woman is an adolescent, she's very, very impressionable. And misinformation at that time can be devastating, as Michelle just said. But you know, the best thing one can do is, of course, seek other sources of information. You know, the internet is a good source often, but also make sure you go to the right specialist. Reproductive endocrinologists are trained in these very issues. I myself had a patient not too long ago who was told she can't have a baby ever and needed a surrogate. And she came to me to do a surrogacy cycle, and we found that her really main issue was she had a lot of fibroids, and they can be easily treated with surgery. So you know, I always tell patients and people that I meet that always make sure you have all the information you need before making any drastic decisions.
That's exactly right. And a lot of times these young women are getting information that it is that's devastating just related to their pubertal development. For instance, there can be a lot of abnormalities with the female reproductive tract, particularly with the uterus, where the uterus doesn't develop at all and the vagina doesn't develop, or it develops partially. And so they're showing up saying, I haven't started my period, thinking maybe there's some kind of a hormonal issue. And what they're finding out is that they were born without a uterus, without a vagina. And now it calls into question even their ability to have a sexual relationship in the future.
Yeah, and in such cases, it's so very important to have a complete evaluation, because some of these women may also have a genetic disorder. And it's extremely important to correctly diagnose the etiology of whatever they're experiencing. Certain genetic disorders can have other health manifestations. They can also, in some cases, lead to tumor development. So appropriate diagnosis in a timely fashion is extremely important in these cases.
I agree, but I want to address mostly the issue of having a young girl, 15, 16 years old, that not only has been told she can't ever become pregnant and have a baby, but she also doesn't even have a vagina to function sexually. And this is a fairly rare situation. Of course, for us, it isn't, because we always end up seeing these young women to help with that. And so it's very important when you're addressing these situations to let these young women know that there's a stepwise process where everything can be addressed. So if you had a girl who was sent to you and this is what she's been told, and she's been told that she's never going to be able to have a baby, what would you tell her?
Well, as you mentioned, a stepwise evaluation is important. If she does suffer from, you know, underdevelopment of the reproductive structures, underdevelopment of the vaginal canal, those can actually be treated surgically. And, you know, it's a long process. It's not an easy process.
Or treated non-surgically, which is more the issue these days with the absence of a vaginal canal. That's right. Much less commonly a surgical procedure.
That's true. So, you know, a lot of these treatments do take time, and it is important for us to counsel these young women that, you know, with patience and the right appropriate treatments, oftentimes they can have good results. And again, back to the same issue, that always best to see the appropriate specialist and be evaluated and know what your options are. And then they can decide if that's something that they want to pursue or they don't.
What about having a child?
In cases where the uterus is absent, in those cases, most of the times they do have presence of ovaries. It's rare to have all of it absent, which can happen. But if the ovaries are present, then...
And that's going to be at least 95%+ of the time.
That's correct. And if the ovaries are present, then women can go through in vitro fertilization where their eggs are retrieved, and then use a surrogate to carry the embryos and give birth. And that is a lot more common now than it used to be in the past. But certainly that is an option if they wanted their own biological child.
Can I just ask you a point of information? Because these two terms get misused and confused many times. Is there a difference between a true surrogate and a gestational carrier?
Gestational carrier is a person who essentially is carrying your embryos for you. It is more of a politically correct term now than surrogate, as in the past. But a gestational carrier, most people actually enter into a legal agreement with the woman, and when the baby is born, the baby belongs to the intended parents, and the gestational carrier does not have any legal claim to that baby. Of course, it's very important to have a contract in place before all of this goes through. But essentially, they're just carrying your child and during the pregnancy, and hence the term gestational carrier.
So I think we're really, really fortunate in Texas because the laws are incredibly clear on who parents are in this situation. If you're old like me, a lot of us remember a case in Illinois called the Baby M case, where that was a case of true surrogacy where the gestational carrier was also the egg donor. And that went many, many years because once the child was born, the birth mother decided that she didn't want to give the child to the intended parents. And it was a very, very devastating situation for everyone involved. And I think at that time, Texas was progressive and basically outlawed surrogacy in its true sense. So when we talk about using the uterus of someone else to carry a genetic embryo of two other people, then it's, I don't want people to get worried that becomes an issue, because it's very, very clear in the state of Texas who that child belongs to. And actually, the intended parents or the biological parents will actually be the parents of record on the birth certificate. Well, what about the other situation where you have a young girl who comes in and same story, she is brought in because she has not had a period, and the evaluation reveals that she has a uterus, she has a vagina, but her ovaries don't have eggs.
That also has several etiologies, and unfortunately, we haven't figured out how to diagnose all of them. Sometimes all the testing does not reveal the exact cause, and that's called idiopathic, where we essentially don't know, but there are so many genes and chromosomes that have to have just the right genetic makeup in order for the ovaries to function correctly. In other women, which is one of the more common causes of failure of the ovaries to work, is something called Turner syndrome, where they only have one copy of the X chromosome. And such women often will have very early failure of the ovaries, and therefore they don't produce eggs, they don't ovulate, they don't have the normal hormone production, and they don't develop the secondary characteristics of adolescence, such as breast development, and they don't have periods.
So these women show up basically because they haven't gone through puberty, and they're getting the same information oftentimes by the pediatrician, whoever's making the diagnosis, that, oh, this is the problem, and oh, yes, by the way, you'll never be able to have a baby.
That's correct. And Turner syndrome is one of the more difficult issues to deal with. They can go through egg donation when they have a partner and they're in a stable relationship and want a child. Their uterus is capable of carrying a child. The egg would just have to come from another person, fertilized with her husband's sperm, and then the embryo is transferred into her uterus. However, with Turner syndrome, there are other health issues that we also have to worry about. They often will have dilation of the aorta, and those have to be evaluated before we can determine it's safe for that woman to carry a pregnancy.
Yeah, I have a situation like this. Well, actually a couple, but one that's pretty fresh and recent, where this young woman had been sent to a medical geneticist for evaluation after she had presented to her pediatrician. and it was determined that she was missing an X chromosome. And so she went through evaluation, cardiac evaluation, skeletal evaluation, everything was fine. And she was told that her only option to become pregnant would be to go through adoption. And so she was sent to me because she had never gone through puberty. And so she needed to have someone manage her hormones so that she would go through puberty like a normal teenager. And in the process of having a conversation with her, she tells me that, her mother tells me that, oh yeah, by the way, I know that if I'm ever going to have a baby, I'm going to need to adopt. And this was about 10 years ago, 10 or 12 years ago when I met this family. And I said at the time, well, that's not necessarily true. Do you have sisters? And she said, yeah, I have a sister that's 2 years older than me, and I have another one that's 3 years younger. And so I said, well, when you decide that you want to become pregnant and start a family, come see me. And so she did that 2 years ago. No, I guess it's 3 years ago now. And she came in and we had gone through puberty very well. She'd had normal development of her uterus, appropriate breast development, had been on hormone replacement therapy in the form of birth control pills for all these years. And she comes in and she says, okay, I'm ready to have a baby. What do I do? And I said, we need to talk to your sister. Because your sister, with the exception of not missing an X chromosome, shares your genetics, the same as your parents. And it turned out that her sister actually served as her egg donor. So she had a child that could have been almost indistinguishable genetically from her. And she and her husband were able to conceive and have a baby. And she's actually coming back now to try for a second child with embryos that were frozen from that first experience. So that is kind of a start to finish story. But again, she had been told by our pediatrician that this was absolutely a no-go and she would have to adopt. So I think that the way that that information is presented is super important. And it's a lot of it is just ignorance and not knowing what technology is available for us. We're going to take a break real quick. And when we come back, we're going to talk about what we can do from a male standpoint. If a male's been told that that he can't father a child, or if couples or individuals are facing potential fertility ending therapies. So please join us when we're back at Beyond the Birds and the Bees, Talk Radio 1370 AM.
Welcome back to Beyond the Birds and Bees on Austin's Talk 1370.
Thanks for listening and welcome back to Beyond the Birds and the Bees. This is Dr. Lisa Hansard with Dr. Rinku Mehta.
Hello.
And today's topic is if you've ever been told you'll never have a baby. We have talked about situations where young women are told at a very early age that they have a condition that will preclude them from ever being pregnant or having genetic children, and some of the options that exist for making that not true. And let's talk a little bit now about boys. We always talk about girls, but let's talk about boys. So what happens when we see men that come in and have been told that they are not going to be able to father a pregnancy because of their sperm counts?
You know, there can be a couple of reasons why men can have very low or no sperm. One of them could be a blockage, and the best way to know is to get assessed, and that can be fairly easily diagnosed. And there are ways to retrieve sperm directly from the testicle, which can then be used in vitro fertilization and result in a baby. Other causes can be hormonal, and evaluation can also reveal that, and there may be medications that these men can take to improve their sperm count. There's also certain genetic conditions that can cause this, which unfortunately are not amenable to treatment, but many of the other things can be treated.
It reminds me of a patient that I saw several years ago, and they had had one child. It was a couple who had been married for about 15 years, and they were interested in having another one. And he had a sperm count or semen analysis done, and he had no sperm, zero. And so, of course, that called into a question what had happened 15 years ago when they conceived their first child. And it turns out that he had been diagnosed along the way with a low testosterone level. And the approach that was taken by his primary doctor was to start him on testosterone injections. And so in that scenario, and this, and I saw, believe it or not, saw someone last week, the exact same situation. Again, this just goes back to the comment you made about making sure that you're being evaluated by someone who is very, very knowledgeable and trained in these issues, because this couple, 5 or 6 years ago, we stopped the testosterone. He, of course, went through a very difficult time where he had no hormones around. He felt terrible. And then very gradually, but very predictably, his hormones came back into play. We gave him a little bit of a boost with some medication to stimulate stimulate the testicles to make more testosterone and more sperm, and they were able to easily conceive after about 6 months.
You are so right, Lisa. You know, we see this all the time, of course, and unfortunately, they're being treated for a symptom, the low testosterone,
exactly,
instead of figuring it out why. And giving testosterone to a man who wants to be, you know, father a child is essentially like giving him a birth control pill.
Absolutely.
And unfortunately, this knowledge or, you know, this is not well known in primary care community, and we see this all the time.
All the time. So that's a pretty common and incredibly treatable cause of a low sperm count or no sperm. So what about the teenage boy who's 18, 19 years old, which is pretty common when a diagnosis of testicular cancer is made, and he's facing the prospect of losing his fertility, not never having it, but losing it maybe even before he's had an opportunity to become a parent.
You know, such cases are great to be able to treat in a timely fashion. Sperm freezing has been around for decades, and you know, frozen sperm can father a child very readily if it was frozen at the right time in the right quantities. And in such patients, usually before they undergo chemotherapy, several semen samples are frozen for future use, and they can be frozen indefinitely. We don't really have a cutoff that, oh, it's only good for 10 years, but you know, they can have that frozen for a long time. I recently had a patient who is much older, and he all of a sudden found a lump, and the next thing they know, he's having surgery and then chemotherapy, and they froze several vials of sperm, and they're about to go through a cycle and hopefully end up pregnant.
That's great. And I think that that Lance Armstrong, when he was first diagnosed with testicular cancer and going through this, was very open about his treatment, and even started a foundation that looked at fertility sparing treatments prior to cancer therapy. And I think that that really raised the awareness, particularly for testicular cancer. What about women who are going to undergo fertility ending treatments for, say, for instance, breast cancer that may require chemotherapy that's going to make them infertile?
Well, for women, if they are married or in a stable relationship or have a partner they want to have children with, the best method for them would be to go through in vitro fertilization and then freeze all the embryos that were created. Embryo freezing is a lot simpler process and more proven as far as fertility rates than freezing eggs. However, if they're younger or don't have a partner, we can also freeze eggs. There is a new process called vitrification by means of which the eggs can be frozen, and their survival rates are much better than with previous methods. So this is definitely a viable option for women to pursue before they go through chemotherapy. and something that they can look into. There are organizations such as Fertile Hope. I believe the name is now now called Sharing Hope. That will even provide free medications to these women and make it a lot less expensive.
I think that our medical community in Austin has done a fantastic job of discussing these issues with young women as they are being newly diagnosed and facing these first, of course, a devastating diagnosis of cancer at a young age, and then looking at a treatment that's going to be very difficult and, you know, hopefully successful. A lot of times the last thing that that is ever discussed by the oncologist is future fertility. But I really would like to say thank you and send kudos to our oncologists in Austin who have really made this a part of the conversation that they're having with these individuals about the options available for preserving fertility. And there's always a rush to initiate therapy, but as you know, we can often go through a whole stimulation cycle and have eggs or embryos in the freezer within several weeks of the diagnosis of cancer, where there isn't really any type of a significant delay in initiating chemotherapy.
Absolutely. And the great thing about embryo freezing is, or even eggs, is a woman's uterus is healthy for a long time. So women with breast cancer, after they go through treatment, if they have to be on chemotherapy for 5 years, they can come back at that time and use the embryos or eggs, and they will be in that same state as the day they were frozen indefinitely.
That is absolutely correct. I actually have a patient, couple of patients right now who have been in this situation and fortunately seen the physicians in Austin who are taking care of their cancer, and they have gone through this process, frozen their embryos, and are now pursuing pregnancy using a gestational carrier at the same time they're undergoing their treatment and their 5-year wait for a cure. So all of these things are possible, and I think that that we've given a lot of examples, starting with Michelle, about situations where things aren't helpless and things aren't hopeless, and there are lots of opportunities to become pregnant. Thank you for joining us. We're out of time. I can't believe this hour has gone by so quickly. This is Dr. Lisa Hansard with Dr. Rinku Mehta from Texas Fertility Center. Please join us next week when we will continue a conversation about uterine tumors, fibroids, and their treatment and impact on fertility. Have a great Saturday and tune in next week to Beyond the Birds and the Bees. For more information, Talk Radio 1370 AM, www.txfertility.com.
Talk Radio 1370 AM.